Well, I understand last Sunday, Bob went through, kind of did a review of the entire second cycle, and then on Wednesday evening, started into the third cycle, and made it from before the flood up to, or through the Exodus, and didn't start into the wandering the wilderness, if that's correct. I'm looking to you guys, because you were here, I wasn't. So, shaking of the head would be appreciative. Yeah, thank you, okay. All right, so what we're going to do is, like I said, because we do have plenty of time as we're taking the entire quarter to go through this study. The study can be done in a home study in a matter of only a couple hours. You can spread out over a couple, six, seven lessons. Or, like I said, the good part about this whole study is you can actually spread out across the entire quarter, which is going to give us a lot more time and opportunity to go through and drill ourselves on some of the information we've already covered. And it gives us the opportunity to kind of present a little bit of information, review that information, drill ourselves on that information, and then go back and present a little bit more. So each time we're just kind of building on what we already know, what we've already established. So, I also have to express my appreciation for understanding you guys wowed Bob with your knowledge of the judges. So, for that I say thank you very much. I accomplished everything I set out to do in cycle two. You guys are... got the 17 periods down pat. I don't have any doubt on that. So what we're going to do this time, this morning, rather than me asking you to list off the 17 periods, what I'd like to do is go through and review cycle two quickly and ask you, I'm going to give you a name of an individual, and you tell me where can we find that individual, which cycle, which period can we find that individual. So if I tell you King David, where would we go? Which period would we go to find King David? United Kingdom. Very good. What about Samson? Judges. Okay, again, very good. See, these things are all individuals, stories we remember. We've already established in the 17 periods, so we're not really having to think about which period, which period, which period, and remember where they fall. We already know the stories. We can associate them really quickly, so it makes it a lot easier for us. It's, again, the 17 periods have become second nature to us. We don't have to really think about them. Now we just wonder which stories fit into which period. Cain. Where are we going to find the story of Cain? Before the flood, very good. Onesimus. Letters to the Christians. Okay, I was a little bit through your curveball on that one. We didn't really go over the New Testament a whole lot because people usually have a pretty good knowledge, understanding of the New Testament and a lot of stories associated to it. And again, as we look at the New Testament, I mean, it really breaks down into three periods. You get the life of Christ, the early church, and letters to the Christians. And so, trying to decipher which ones fit where, really just think about if it doesn't fall under the life of Christ or in the book of Acts, where is it going to fall? The letters to the Christians. So we have the story of Onesimus falls under the letters to the Christians. Very good. What about Isaac? Patriarchs. Again, we got the patriarchs. Who are the three patriarchs? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Who was the connecting story during that period as well? See, again, it's stuff that just it's right on the front of your brain. You don't have to think about it. Before, we'd ask you, and I can see eyeballs going side to side, thinking backwards. You're trying to pull that information up, but we've been going over these stories more and more, and with each time we present the story, it's still fresh in your mind, and hopefully, everyone's been doing a little bit of studying at home, just like you did with the list of the judges. You study it, take 2 minutes out of your day to go through and just review the information, and it keeps it fresh. Zerubbabel. Return from captivity, okay? Very good. Moses. The Exodus. Rehoboam. Okay, divided kingdom. And remember, Rehoboam was kind of a lot of the reason why we had the divided kingdom. What was the story behind Rehoboam? What was he unwilling to do? Exactly. He was unwilling to give relief to the people. The people said, hey, just help provide some relief from all these taxes your father put on us, and we'll be happy to serve you. And of course, he didn't look to the knowledge and the wisdom of the elders of the day and the information they had to offer. Instead, he looked to the individuals who were his age or younger and said, what do you guys think I should do? And, of course, they're saying, don't give them to them now. If you give them to them now, they're just going to walk all over you, pressure them even harder. And because of that, we see where the kingdom actually divides. The Pharisees were founded during this time period. Years of silence. Okay, I had to struggle for this one. I was trying to find a name to associate to this period. And I went back, and, of course, I remember we talked about how the Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essenes, I believe is the name, were all founded during this time period. And we have the story of Daniel. Captivity, okay? Remember we talked about Daniel and the lion's den. We have Daniel. A lot of stories from Daniel. You know, again, they're all things where we can turn around and just think about. We don't have to worry about the names of the time periods. We just know we associate those stories back to those time periods. So the names of the time periods aren't really a struggle anymore. It's just remembering where do they fit, which time period, which story. Joshua as the leader. Okay, we got the invasion and conquest. Okay, we have Joshua the spy, who would fall under what time period? Okay, but we have Joshua the leader here at this point. He's been given charge of leading the nation of Israel to go in and take that promised land, which God promised to them, which they were at first, even though he came back and said, hey, we can definitely take the land, but the other 10 spies were like, oh no, there's giant walls, cities, and we're just small grasshoppers to them. But because at this point, Joshua's been now given the charge to lead the nation of Israel, and they go in and they take over, and they have the three campaigns. You remember what the three campaigns were in order? Central campaign, southern, and then the northern campaign. Very good. Okay, then we have people with a confused speech. Where are we going to find this? What's your time period? Scattering the people. Very good. And then we have Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Okay, what happened to Korah, Dathan, and Abiram? What? The earth swallowed up. It wasn't a usual death by definition. It would be something that would be definitely described as unusual. The angel Gabriel. Life of Christ. Okay, well, couldn't really put Christ in there. It would be a dead giveaway for you, so we had to sneak it up a little bit. And angel Gabriel, and we have Stephen. Where can we read about Stephen and him making his defense? The early church. Very good. Under Acts chapter 7. Noah, the flood. Hezekiah, Manasseh, and Josiah? Judah alone. Okay. If I had a gold star, I was going to toss it out to you, but I think I left them in my other coat. All right. So that brings us through, again, like I said, cycle two. We went through, we reviewed each of the stories. We took the opportunity to review a lot of stories that everybody already knew. There wasn't anything brand new. It wasn't anything that I really presented a story and anybody was like, well, I've never heard that one before. Or if you hadn't heard it in quite a while, you might have said, oh, as we talked about, refresh your memory. You're like, oh, yeah, I remember talking about that. I remember reading about that in Bible study once before. So it's just a matter of bringing all these stories we already know, bringing them to the front of our mind and keeping them there. A lot of times, if we don't take and reuse and go through and review these stories from time to time, it kind of settles to the back of the mind and eventually becomes a little covered in dust and cobwebs, but every now and then we got to shake them off and bring them back to the front. And so that's what we did with cycle two. We went through and really established which periods they fit. So we have the 17 periods we divide them up to. Now with cycle three, as I'm sure Bob already mentioned, is now we're going to kind of dive in a little bit deeper, take a little more time and opportunity to review. We got the stories, we got the periods, but where in the Bible are we going to go find these stories and these periods? So the study, again, is the cycle, three-cycle approach is overall, it's an overview of the Bible. We're not here to get down to every last detail, every last story, down to the very verse of the Bible where you're going to find these stories. If you know that, great. It's going to be a great help as we continue to progress through. But it's not an exhaustive study. So we're going to continue to go through and, as I like to call it, the Reader's Digest version, where we're going to kind of hit each of these stories, but we're going to try and start drilling into saying, okay, which book in the Bible are we going to find these stories? So cycle two, again, remind us where we can find these stories within the 17 periods, but we really didn't dive into a whole lot into which book of the Bible. Now, we did really kind of spend some time studying the outline of which book? The outline of Genesis. Okay, very good. And we're going to probably spend a good majority today doing that as well as we continue to drill into it a little bit more and a little bit more. So the outline of Genesis is going to be as easy for you to remember as it is the 17 periods. Because again, 17 periods, is there anybody have any still struggling with that at all? No, it's just there. You don't have to think about it, it's just there. So what about the outline of Genesis? Is it just there for you? Does anybody just kind of... Okay, we've got not yet, but I've seen some nods saying, yeah, it's there. So we know we're getting more comfortable with that outline. So now it's time to really kind of get, add some more stories onto that outline that we're already comfortable with. So again, cycle three is going to help us determine the book, the chapter, where we can find these stories. The other important part is, with cycle three, we're now going to take our Bible and use that along with the book. Thus far, we've already gone through, when cycles one and two, we reduced the periods and started looking at the stories. A lot of it was just recognition, remembering the stories we already knew, we're familiar with. And we did everything mostly from this book. But now with cycle three, we really want to start looking at the Bible. This is where we're going to go through and be able to establish where what books, what chapters we're going to be able to find these stories that we're so familiar with. Who can tell me which periods are contained within the books of Genesis? Before the flood, scaring the people, and the patriarchs. Okay, very good. So again, you really weren't struggling at all trying to remember the names of the periods. They were there. You knew which four they were. So with before the flood, can anyone tell me what the outline for before the flood? Chapter 1. Okay, that's an easy one. We got chapter 1 is creation. We roll over to chapter 2. We have Adam and Eve in the garden stuff. Okay. Chapter 3, we had the first sin. Okay, and how did that first sin come about? Okay, the devil tempted Eve. Okay, very good. Then we have chapter 4, the story of Cain and Abel. And then chapter 5, the generations of Adam. Now, we've talked about this before, and I've like to kind of keep reiterating. Sometimes you look at the generations, and you're like, that's a whole list of names. I'll never remember each one of them. Is it necessary for us to remember each and every last one names? No. If you can't remember it, I salute you. A lot of those names that I did, they don't roll off my tongue very easily. But what's the importance of these generations? What do they help us to do? Okay, they transition from one period to the next. What else do they do? It's to help us to establish that lineage of Christ. So no matter where you go in the book of the Bible, you can always point back forwards or backwards to either the beginning of time, creation, or going back the other way towards the coming of who? Christ, the coming of the promised Messiah. So we see there's a clear path to get from point A to point B, and that is really, really important because it helps to also attest to the authority of the Scriptures. It's not just a book, a collection of cleverly devised stories that are really good for moral standards. This is truly the book and the Scriptures of God, and we know that because you can't go through there and pick it apart and find errors or misconceptions or things where they contradict one another. It's all one flowing story, and you see that, and especially it's really important when you talk about the generations because it brings you from point A to point B. Nowhere along the way can you really get lost, because anywhere you can kind of go back and see where you fall along that lineage with Christ. Okay? So we look at chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Again, the book of Genesis, most people, especially when you look at the first period before the flood, everybody's pretty familiar with before the flood. Like I said, when you start Bible school, start going to Bible study, as a little child, even when you're a one-year-old, they sit you in a seat, you're pretty much strapped in, you can't go anywhere. They're occupying you with the time of asking you, who created the earth? God. Who made the rain? God. Something so simple, so simplistic, but you know what? It's ingrained in your mind. No one really has to think about creation a whole lot. They know what happened during that time period of creation. And again, you roll from creation to Adam and Eve, and these are all stories that are something that everybody's really comfortable with. Well, now, as we continue in cycle 3, it's really now we're comfortable with the stories. Are we comfortable with being able to sit down with somebody and be able to study with them and be able to say, okay, well, we want to talk about this, let's turn to this chapter. We want to talk about that, let's turn to this chapter. Because again, especially when you're sitting down to try and study with somebody that maybe is not a Christian or not that familiar with the Scriptures, they're coming to you and they're willing to study with you because they see you as being somebody that's knowledgeable of the Scriptures. Someone that has some authority in the sense that you know what you're doing, you have understanding of the Scriptures. Well, can you prove or show yourself to be knowledgeable if you don't have the ability to turn to the chapters? If you turn around and you spend a lot of time flipping back, flipping forward, looking around, then you're like, oh man, I know I've heard this, or I've heard that lesson before, I've heard this story before, but you can't quite remember where it is. Does that really show you to be knowledgeable of the Scriptures? No, and especially you don't want to be in a study with someone and say, I've heard that story before, I can't quite find it right now, how about I get back to you on that? Again, you want to be able to have knowledge of the Scriptures to where you know where you can kind of flip back and forth and get to that chapter. But the three-cycle approach, again, getting that outline of Genesis, and as we continue to build upon it, we're going to continue to be able to get you within a few page turns of where you need to be to find that story that you want to study. So we have before the flood, then the next one was the flood, which brings us through chapters what? 6 through 10, okay? Chapter 6 being about warning and preparation, okay? Is anyone not familiar with the warning and preparation? What was the reason God was warning Noah? What happened at this time? Okay. Mankind had decided to follow after their own lust, follow after their own desires. They were so worried about following after what they wanted to do, they forgot that they were supposed to be abiding by who? God's law. They forgot that they should be doing what was commanded by God in order to be pleasing in His sight. So if they're not doing what God has prescribed for them, does that mean they're still going to be pleasing in His sight? He was so displeased that He was willing to do what? Destroy mankind. Now, out of all mankind, how many was He able to find that He was willing to save? Okay, He had Noah and his family. So He turned around and He preserves Noah. So again, we see the continuation of the lineage of Christ. And we see that even though everything sometimes seems hopeless, we're like, oh, we're the only ones in the world that's ever faithful to Christ. We're the only ones, the whole world's against us. Well, if anybody should feel that way, it should have been Noah. He was the one that was standing righteous in God's sight during a time that was everyone was so wicked and perverse that God was willing to pretty much wipe out all existence of mankind. But He found one individual and his family who were faithfully serving. Chapter 7, we see the beginning of the flood. Okay? Does the flood end with chapter 7? No, it carries us on through chapter 8 where the flood starts to subside. Okay, and we have the story of the flood. And chapter 9, the events immediately following the flood. Again, the outline of Genesis is still relatively pretty simple. This hasn't been your first exposure to it, so I don't think anything here is new. Now, again, as we continue to go through cycle 3, it's not going to be your last exposure to the outline of Genesis, and also to further outlines we'll discuss. And then the best part is, even after we finish this study, when we finish this quarter, next quarter we're going to be doing what? Starting into this book of Genesis. So already you're going to have a good understanding of the outline of Genesis, which is really going to benefit us all as we begin to study and really drive in deep and hard into the individual books, chapters, and verses that gives us the story of Christ. And then what we have in chapter 10. Again, another generation from Noah. Again, continuing that lineage. We don't have to question where it came through, how it happened. We have that direct lineage. And then we have the scattering of the people. This is a big one, wasn't it? Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel, okay. So we got chapter 11, which includes the story of the Tower of Babel. The confusion of the languages. And so we have, it seems like a really small, minute period, but it's necessary for us to help distinguish the different periods going from one to the other and transitioning one to the other. What else do we find in chapter 11? Again, we had the generations of Shem. So it's a small chapter, one chapter, but it's a powerful story of the Tower of Babel, the confusion of speech. And everyone starts to spread apart. Because God didn't want them to just stay, what, centralized in one area. He needed them to spread apart. He also wanted them to make sure that they weren't focusing on obtaining great goals that they had set for themselves, but also, again, continuing to follow what God had commanded mankind to do. And that brings us to the period of the patriarchs. Okay, again, the patriarchs are Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, very good. No question about it. It's easy to remember. Now, last time we went through the outline, I kind of gave you the brief view. I guess you'd call it the 50-mile up view. We had broke it up into a real broad view of patriarchs consisted of chapters 12 through 50, okay? So now we're going to lower it in a little bit, come in a little closer, and really start to look at how do those patriarchs divide up, because we know the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is not a problem. But if I asked you a story about Isaac, where are you going to turn? If I asked you a story about Joseph, where are you going to turn? What about Abraham? How are you going to know where to go? Well, if I say Abraham, well, your pretty safe bet is, well, I'm sure I can find something in chapters 12, 13, 14, I'm pretty sure, but where is it going to stop? Where are we going to turn around to go to find the end of Abraham and transition into Isaac? Can anyone tell me? Okay, 25. What's 25 marked for us? Okay, so we have the rain, and that comes about because of the death of Abraham. Okay? So it's important for us to be able to know, if we want to find and study the patriarchs, if we know not only 12 through 50, because 12 through 50, let's take a look at our Bible. So we got chapter 12. Now, each Bible is going to be a little bit different depending upon the size of your print, but put your finger in there in chapter 12, and we're going to carry all the way through to the end of chapter 50. Okay, so I got about a eighth of an, well, I say about a 16th, eighth of an inch there. How am I going to know where to find Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? I know, I mean, when you look at the big picture, where do I go to find Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Oh, I need to go here. Well, we've already narrowed down quite a bit, so that kind of helps give you a little boost as far as where you need to be. But now, where am I going to go to find Abraham? Chapters 12 to 25, okay? Well, I'm down to about a 16th of an inch. So we've done really well for ourselves so far because, again, looking at the big picture, we've really narrowed it down to where we need to be. But when we start talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, how many stories can you associate to Abraham? I mean, I run out of fingers, probably even toes. And there's so many good stories and lessons to learn from Abraham that we need to make sure we have a good understanding of where we should turn. So 12 through 25 is going to give us the stories of Abraham, and then followed by Isaac, which begins in chapter 25. Now, Isaac, if you can remember those chapters, 25 through 27, that's going to give you pretty much everything you need to know about Isaac in their sense of when he was the main character, when the focus was on Isaac, when he was the one leading the nation of Israel, 25 through 27, okay? 25, again, begins with the death of Abraham, but then we read in chapter latter part of chapter 25 about Isaac, and he praises God for, what does he want? His wife's barren, so of course every man wants to have a child. They want someone to carry on that family name. Now, we've followed the lineage so far up to this point. It's right now we're looking dead on at Isaac. Is it possible for the lineage of Christ to continue on if a man doesn't have a son to carry on his name? No. So, of course, Abraham, every individual wants to be able to have a child. He prays to God. God gives him what? Huh? Jacob and Esau. So not only does he get one son, he gets a pair of them. Okay? So we see the story of Isaac praying to God. He prays on behalf of Rebekah because she's barren. She gives him two sons, two twins. And what else do we read about these two twins? They were quarrelsome. They were creating trouble for each other. Not only when they were after they're born, but even in the womb, they struggled with each other. And so, where are we going to go to find that? Genesis 25. Okay? Again, Isaac, when we talk about Isaac, we'll look 25 through 27. Now, we look over chapter 25, then 26, we see where Isaac settles in Gerar, and then where he has the trouble with quarrels over the wells with the surrounding nations, the covenant with Abimelech. Chapter 27, we read about Jacob's deception, where he deceives who? Deceives Isaac, deceives his father. And so we see where Jacob's able to go in, and Isaac, at this point, he's 27, just a few chapters, but he's getting pretty old. He's getting up there in age. And so what do we know about Isaac in his old age? He couldn't see very well, okay? And so, is anyone not familiar with the story of how Jacob was able to trick his father Isaac into receiving the blessings? Okay, exactly. So he turned around. Remember, what was the description of Jacob and what was the description of Esau? How would you describe Esau? Hairy and red, okay? He was like a beast of the field. And so, when Jacob went in to deceive his father and to steal the blessings, was he working alone, or did he have an accomplice? He had an accomplice, okay? So we had, his accomplice was his mother, Rebecca. And a lot of this even goes back further when you think about the two struggling in the womb. And once they came out, Jacob was preferred by who? By his father Isaac. Why? What? Oh, sorry, yeah. Okay, Esau was preferred by his father because he was able to do what? He's hunting. He's able to bring the meat of the field to his father, and his father really enjoyed the stew that he provided. And then we have the story of Jacob. He would be considered what most people call a mama's boy. He hung around the camp and his one-on-one with his mom. And again, we see favoritism there. And then it kind of the plan unfolds as it moves forward. And we see where Rebekah works with Jacob to help get those blessings, which, technically speaking, should have been given to Esau. But Esau, why did he not get those blessings? Because he sold them for just a bowl of soup. Okay. Then we go on in chapters 28. Chapter 28, what is... So we have 27 is where Jacob deceives Isaac. But again, the main character here is still Isaac. And then we move into chapter 28. And really, the focus is shifted over to who? Jacob. Okay. So we move from Jacob. And what is the story in chapter 28? Jacob stole away the blessings from his brother. Is Esau happy about this? Not happy at all. Okay. And at this point, we still don't have... Jacob's still not married. He doesn't have any wives. And so this seems like a pretty good reason or excuse for Rebekah to convince Isaac, you better send your son away. I don't want him marrying the daughters of this land. We need him to go off and find a wife. Was that the real reason behind it? Okay, he's fleeing for his life. Because like I said, and there was no secret about it. Isaac or Esau told him, hey, once dad passes on, you're mine. I'm upset about what you've done. You've tricked me, and I'm going to get you for it. And Esau, or Jacob, knew this, so because of that, his mother helped. Again, she was an accomplice, helped go in there, talk to Isaac, say, oh, this is a good idea. This is your idea, Isaac. You should do this. And send him along on his way. And then we have the stories of Jacob as he goes along. He leaves. And what's some of the stories of Jacob? Jacob begins with him departing. He leaves the land. He has a dream. He goes on. Does he find a wife? Two wives. How about that? What were the wives? What was his wives' names? What was so special about Leah and Rachel? They're sisters. So how did he get a two-for-one special? He was deceived. He was tricked. Okay, again, what comes around goes around. You keep tricking everybody, eventually he's going to come back and get you. And so we can see where Jacob goes on, and he ends up with two wives. And not only did he get these two wives, each wife came with a handmaid. And we talked about this when we were going through reviewing cycle two. One wife, two wife, each one has a handmaid. So essentially you got four women in your life that you have to keep happy. Okay? Speaking to the men, is it not a full-time job keeping the one wife happy? Okay, let's multiply that times three, add three more into the mix, and how does that work for you? Not always quite so well. Okay? And then we have, again, before we get that, we go to chapter 35. As we continue through, like I said, we had Jacob. Well, before we get to chapter 35, we have Jacob. He goes off and he marries Rachel and Leah. And he was tricked by his father-in-law, whose name was Laban, okay? But was Jacob always the one being tricked, or did he get the upper hand before he left? He had that upper hand. And again, during his time, even though he had done some tricks and stuff in the earlier life, he was always faithful to God. He remained faithful to God. He carried out God's commandments. And because of that, God had continued to what? Bless him. Bless him with health. He had wives. And he also had many personal belongings as far as riches and livestock. And so we see where when he leaves to go home, he basically sneaks away from Laban. He makes his way apart. Was Laban happy about him leaving? No. Why? His good help. It was like free labor, essentially. And so he gets away. But before he makes his way home, is he a little apprehensive about going home? Why? He's been away for a long time. I mean, who doesn't like to go home? Jacob was a little apprehensive about going home because of Esau. Okay. What was the last thing Esau told him before he left? I'm going to kill you. He didn't make no bones about it. He didn't beat around the bush. He didn't say, oh, me and you, we're going to have it out. We're going to do this. Something's going to happen. He says, I'm going to kill you. And so that's the last thing that Jacob remembers as he departs. And now he is on his way back home. And what does he remember? The last thing he saw was his brother proclaiming he's going to kill him. And so this worried Jacob a lot. And we had the stories of how Jacob turned around and divided up his party and sent back in little smaller parties and presented gifts. And what was Esau's reaction to these gifts? What's this all about? Why are you doing this for me? And then once they finally meet together, what happens? Does Esau pull out that club and hit him on top of the head? No. He reaches out and embraces his brother. He's so happy to see his brother. And so again, we see growth and maturity on both parts. Esau, or Jacob, worried a lot about something that really didn't even exist anymore. And Esau was just happy to have his brother back again. And so we see that. And Esau, Jacob was still even so, even though he was head over Esau, still presented himself in a humble manner. He still presented himself as, here, I'm help, here to help you, I'm here to serve you, even though he was the one being served. And so we move on from there, and then have the story of the crossover, and then we have the treachery of Jacob's sons. And now, again, with four wives, it tends to give you quite a few kids, doesn't it? Yeah. So not only did he have a lot of kids, he had quite a few sons, and altogether he had 12 sons representing the 12 tribes. Very good. And then we stop off in chapter 35. 35 goes through. We have the sons of Israel. And what kind of brings the end of Jacob here? What happens in chapter 36? Focus continue to be on Jacob. Moves over to Esau. Okay? So chapter 36, we have the generations of Esau, which also becomes, we have Edom. Now this helps us again to help keep going, not only at this point, it's not necessarily the lineage of Christ, but helps us to keep understanding of where does these, there's a break here, because you have two twins coming out at the same time. One of these two are going to be in the lineage. Esau was in that lineage. So we have now the continuation and following of Jacob's lineage. And then we start off in 37 with Joseph. What does chapter 37 tell us about Joseph? Joseph, there's some dreams. Okay? What we've noticed so far, if we go through and we talk about each of the different patriarchs and where does each one fall, a lot of times when you're studying, a lot of times you want to try and think of a person's life as the beginning and end, their birth and death. Now, in relation to the Bible, when we talk about how does it fit to the plan of God, can we look at it as simple as their birth and death? No, because Joseph was born quite a few chapters back, but you know what? The focus and the attention wasn't on him until we get to chapter 37, when he begins to have these dreams. And these dreams are what begin to establish him as being the next main character. Establish him as he's the one the lineage is going to come through. And so that's what's important as we go through and understand and learn the stories. We're not wanting to necessarily learn the birth and death of each individual, but where do they become the main character? Where do they become the important part of God's plan? And so with chapter 37, we have God. Joseph has these dreams, and the dreams, were they well received by his family? No, not at all. And again, even so much so that his brothers began to hate him for it. So much so that they turned around and did what? Sold him, okay? They didn't really like the idea of him having these grand ideas that, hey, even though you're my older brothers, you're going to bow down to me, you're going to serve me. They didn't want to hear anything about that. And it really didn't help a whole lot that he had the special what? Special coat. Coat of many colors. Again, nothing new, not a new story there. And again, this coat was given to him because there was favoritism shown by Jacob. Does favoritism usually play out very well when you have children? Not at all. Okay, so we have chapters 37 through 50, which is again going to bring us through the rest of the book of Genesis. So let's go ahead and just flip through our Bibles a little bit. We got chapter 37. We start off with Joseph's dreams. Before we even get out of chapter 37, we have the plot against Joseph. So he's already on a hot plate trying to figure out what's going to happen. Chapter 38 is really a chapter that kind of doesn't really fit into the story of Joseph when we talk about Judah and Tamar. But we really, once we get past 38, we jump right back into Joseph in chapter 39 with his success where? In Egypt, okay? So, did he move to Egypt with a promotion saying, hey, we got the job for you. We're going to bring you down with a big salary, give you a nice house. We're going to pay all your moving expenses, come down here, and that's how you're going to have success in Egypt? How did he start out in Egypt? A slave, okay? Then he went from being a slave to a slave where? In prison. Okay, so you go from bad to worse. That's not a good combination, but again, he never lost his faith in God. He never lost his ability or desire to want to serve God. And because of that, we see that he has not only just mediocre success in Egypt, he gets to the point where he is what? The right-hand man of Pharaoh. There is nothing in charge of, there's no one else in charge of Egypt, and all the land of Egypt, and all the belongings of Egypt, except for Pharaoh, what Pharaoh has. But Pharaoh pretty much says, hey, I recognize your ability. I recognize that you have an ability to lead these people, lead the nation, lead, help us out of the coming, what? Coming famine, okay? So he turns around and puts everything in charge, in Joseph's charge. And so that's a great accomplishment in and of itself. We continue on, 41, we see where Pharaoh had his dream and stuff. And in chapter 42, we see where Joseph's brothers are sent to Egypt. So at this point, we have the famine's already kind of taking full effect, and Joseph's down in Egypt. We see that he's a transitioning story, getting from up in Canaan down to Egypt. But now we have the brothers come down to Egypt looking for some food, because word gets around that only if you want food, if you want grain, you need to go to Egypt. And what happens when the brothers come down to Egypt? Who do they go before? Joseph. How'd that happen? Providence of God. Okay, not only did they go before him, what else did they do? They knelt down, they bowed down before him. So a fulfillment of what? The dream that he had, the dreams that God had given him, fulfillment of God's plan. All right, and then we have the story of how Joseph, he didn't turn around and send all the brothers back. He kept some behind. And then he turned around, sent them back to bring back who? Send them all back to come back and say, hey, bring back who? Benjamin. Okay? And then when they sent him back, he kept Benjamin behind. And then what happened? Who ended up coming back that third time? Jacob. The whole family moved down because they knew that Joseph was now able to provide for the whole family. He was able to be the one, the leader, the head over the whole family. Even though Jacob's still alive, who has a predominant position in this point? Joseph. Joseph is the one who's able to provide for the family. So again, a fulfillment of what? Okay? The fulfillment of the dream, because this dream was about what? The moon and the stars. All bowed down. Okay? So we have the chapter 44, chapter 45. Deals kind of with his family. Chapter 46, we see where Jacob moves down to Egypt. Chapter 48. We're starting to come down to the what? The last days of who? Of Israel. Also Jacob, okay? Now, Israel, Jacob still played a very important part in the nation of God, the nation of Israel, and his family. He was still essentially the head of that. Even though Joseph was the one providing at this point, everybody still looked to Jacob for his knowledge and wisdom. And then we have what happens in chapter 50. Okay, we have Jacob dies. And that brings us through to the end. And that brings us to the end of chapter 50, which is also the end of the book of Genesis. Okay. So, again, we have the outline of Genesis, chapters 1 through 5, before the flood, chapters 6 through 10, the flood itself, chapter 11, the scattering of the people. Now, instead of just saying 12 through 50, you guys can hopefully confidently at this point say, chapters 12 through 25. You repeat after me. Chapters 12 through 25 is the story of Abraham, okay? After Abraham, who's the next patriarch? Isaac, and he can be found in chapters 25 through 27. Very good. Who proceeded after Jacob, okay? Jacob, let me read his stories in 28 through 35. So does that lead the rest of the book of Genesis to Joseph? Oh, we got, that's right, we got Esau snuck in there on chapter 36. And then chapters 37 through 50 finishes out with the story of Joseph and all the stories and lessons that go along with that. So again, we started out, we had the outline of Genesis as 1 through 5, 6 through 10, 11 through, or chapter 11, and then 12 through 50. Which is, again, a very, very good start for anybody beginning to understand how does the book of Genesis develop? How does it divide up? But now, you guys feel a little bit better about how the patriarchs play out, where do they each fit. Okay, again, 12 through 25, 25 through 27, 28 through 35, 36, 37 through 50. Okay? Any question? Anybody feel not so comfortable with it yet? Okay. I see a lot of smiles, and I'm assuming that's because you know we're going to go over this time and time again. It's not going to be the last time we address this subject. And again, once we start into next quarter, you know what? You're going to have a whole quarter just to focus right there. We're going to move on. So, before we move on, where in Genesis can I find? Okay, so if you want to tell me you start off with the period, but eventually I want you to tell me what chapters can I find this? Where can I find if I have a question about eating blood? Okay, remember we got, let's narrow it down. What's the period we're going to think about this is going to fall under? The flood, okay. Period of flood is going to be chapters 6 through 10. Where does this fall? Chapter 9, which includes the events immediately following the flood. Very good. Cain slays Abel. Chapter 4, very good. So we have chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 1 being creation, 2 Adam and Eve, 3 the first sin, 4 Cain and Abel, and then 5 the generations. Generations of Noah. Chen, very good. Okay, so again, it's going to fall under the flood, but the very last chapter of that period, chapter 10, is going to give us the generations of Noah. Promises are given to Abraham. The initial time that God comes to him and says, these promises are for you if you only obey and be obedient. Chapter 12, okay, because that's the beginning of the patriarchs, and not only the patriarchs, but 12 through 25 being for Abraham specifically. The rainbow covenant. Okay, again, chapter 9, the events immediately following the flood, God comes and he says, I will never again kill everyone by water. And so he gives them the rainbow covenant. God created the light. Chapter 1, very good. The snake talks to Eve in the garden. Chapter 3, okay, very good, because that's the sin, first sin. Speech is confused. Tower of Babel, chapter 11. Flood begins in chapter 7. Okay, very good. Okay, because what happened in chapter 6? Warning of preparations. Okay, so it wasn't like the flood just happened all of a sudden. God gave him the warning of preparation. Noah had time and opportunity to be able to build the ark. The death of Abraham. Okay, so remember, 12 through 25 is going to give us the story of Abraham. So 25 begins with the death of Abraham. And the last portion of 25 is going to be the story of Isaac and his prayer to God for some children. Animals are given for food. Chapter 9, very good. God takes Adam's rib. 2. Very good. So we have Adam in the garden. Well, we start out, we have Adam in the garden, but he wasn't looking very happy there by himself, so God recognized the need for a woman. Generations of Adam. Chapter 5, very good. Building of the ark. Chapter 6, very good. Joseph's dream. Okay. 37. Very good. Okay, because where did we find Joseph? 37 through 50. Very good. The flood subsides. Chapter 8, very good. The death of Joseph. Chapter 50, very good. Jacob sent away. Now, even though it's a pop quiz, definitely feel free to use your Bible. It's an open book test. So I want to hear someone confidently tell me it's in chapter... There we go. Thank you very much. Isaac is tricked by Jacob. 27, very good. Jacob's name is changed to Israel. We find that in I haven't got time until the buzzer goes off, so I mean, again, it's open book test. You're only going to learn by exploring your Bible. 32. Thank you very much. And then Isaac is given two sons in chapter 25. Because remember, the beginning of chapter 25 is the death of Abraham. Isaac comes now the main character. And the first story we have is him praying to God for sons. And the law of capital punishment, chapter 9. Okay, very good. So there we have the outline of Genesis. Thank you very much.